You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Howdy, this is Dr. Jeff Rouse, and you're watching the Best Practices Show. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're in the game of high quality restorative or any type of care in dentistry, you're seeing this subject everywhere. It's called airway. It is not going away, and it's one of the biggest things that is currently influencing dentistry and will continue to influence dentistry. And I've got one of the worldwide experts, and you're going to see why, Dr. Jeff Rouse, who just came back from the Airway Pediatric Summit, and you do not want to miss this because he was one of the experts on the panel. He's going to tell us what happened and what we can expect in the future. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. Settle in. You're going to love this. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching it, if you have questions, add them to the feed and I'll dish them to Jeff right away while we have him on the phone. We'll get the answers straight from the expert. Or if you're watching these later on, you're going to see he's a social media maniac. He'll respond to some of your questions if you add them to the feed, because we want you to get the most out of this while you're watching it. So please do that. Have your team members watch this. Share it with your specialists. You're going to love it. Now, other things. Thank you for sending us all the suggestions for shows. Again, we're just doing our best to line this up with the best experts in all of dentistry, including Jeff. I'm going to have him back as many times as I possibly can. Right now, we're up over 39,000 followers, almost to 40,000 on Facebook, and over 150,000 of you have visited us on iTunes. So I don't have anything to say other than thank you, guys. This is so much fun. Now, my guest today, Dr. Jeff Rouse. If you have, the only way you've never heard of this guy is you've just been sleeping underneath a rock. And I'm going to tell my story. I got a chance to meet him out at the Seattle Study Club Symposium years ago. He's just one of those speakers who's just really gifted at what he, you know, how he presents himself, how he communicates. And a lot of times, as I got a chance to see him speak the first time, I'm like, darn, this guy is really good. On top of it, he's an incredible human being. I always love the parties you throw at your house. And you only invited me to one, but it was one of the best parties I've ever been to. And I just enjoy it. And we've been almost kicked out of many restaurants together, which is always fun to do. I'll tell one story that I love telling. I went to see him one time, and I'm like, that's my buddy. And the guy outside the door is like, I don't care who you are. Nobody's going to this room. I walked into the room, and it was standing room only. There were people along the side of the wall. I couldn't even find a place to stand while he was presenting, and it was magic to watch what you do. So that's my story on you. But if somebody's watching this, Jeff, and they've never heard of you or Spear Education or what you do, tell them a little bit about who Jeff Rouse is. What do you do? And give them some background.
Well, thanks, Kirk. What I was just doing was I was actually sharing your show because I love watching it every week. Every time a new one comes out, that's what, actually my son will go, can we go do that? No, hang on just a minute. I got to go watch this show. So I love having the opportunity to be here. Anyway. I'm a private practicing prosthodontist in San Antonio, Texas. And so all the things that you and I talk about actually happen in a real office. As a prosthodontist today, we're going to talk about pediatric issues. As a prosthodontist, my whole goal of becoming a prosthodontist, I think, was to not ever treat another child. But I actually, because of the airway link, I see quite a bit of quite a few kids, and I put together a team to help them out. So we will talk about that in our practice, and I do have kids come in, and I do have a strong interest in that. But yeah, everything I do is real world stuff. I'm not an academic guy or a teacher. I do it, and then I go out and teach what I do here in my office all the time.
Yeah, and you're also one of the key faculty members at Spear Education, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You just do an incredible job. Now, I want to talk about this because this is such a hot topic. You just got back from the ADA Roundtable Airway Summit, Pediatric Air Summit. There was an ENT there, two pediatric dentists, three orthodontists, two myofunctional therapists, one pediatric psychologist, five GPs, and one prosthodontist, that was you, assembling the best experts in the world on airway. Now, this, first of all, let's talk about why this subject was important and what was the purpose of this meeting.
Yeah, it was a real honor to get an opportunity to be there. Steve Carstensen, who practices up in Seattle or right outside of Seattle, and also runs the sleep course at Spear Education, put it all together. He did an incredible job, which was actually interesting. Steve really was a sleep guy. He was an adult. I mean, he was kind of the fat old man that would come to his practice and he'd make an advancement appliance. And then he got this real interest in pediatric screening and assisting them and getting healthier. And it happened right at the same time the American Dental Association was taking an interest in it as well. So at last year's ADA meeting, they actually came out with some statements that were very supportive of dentists being involved in the world of, it's still somewhat limited their view. The world of sleep was pretty much their focus for adults. So their statement was basically that we need to start looking at apnea in adults. We need to do some sort of questionnaires in the practice. When we make appliances, that they said we ought to be titrating them and using screening tools like a pulse oximeter to help us do that. And so that was fairly supportive from the adult standpoint. The thing that they really came out in very strong support of was dentistry's role in the prevention of this problem and being able to get to the pediatric patient earlier. So they actually, I've got the policy statement here. They came out with a policy statement that said in children, screening through history and clinical examination may identify signs and symptoms of deficient growth and development or other risk factors that may lead to airway issues. If the risk for sleep-related breathing disturbance is determined, intervention through medical or dental referral or evidence-based treatment may be appropriate to help treat the sleep-disturbed breathing and/or develop an optimal physiologic airway and breathing pattern. So, I mean, that's a very strong statement in support of dentists finding this early and actually utilizing the tools that we have as general dentists, as orthodontists, as pediatric dentists that are doing orthodontic intervention. Anyone that can get involved at that point and start assisting the airway and growth and development would have a great role to play. So the ADA is very much behind the restorative dentist, the orthodontist, the pediatric dentist, absolutely becoming involved in figuring this problem out and even more so doing something about it. So that was kind of the impetus behind it. They came out with a great policy statement, and as with many things that are done in large organizations or governments, they end up saying, we need to do this, and we need to be involved, but they didn't tell us how. They forgot that part. And so that was what this was. Steve said, you know, this statement is awesome, but we got to actually have the how do we implement it part. So that's what it was all about.
Right. And kind of left that up to you. Now, give us some perspective on this, too. Like, you know, you're a big statistics guy and understanding, like, how big of a problem is children's airway or pediatric airway in the world? Because some people are watching this may think, it's not a big deal. It's a huge deal.
So the problem, Kirk, that we end up running into is that too often when we start these conversations, it devolves into the idea of how many kids have apnea or how many adults have apnea. And really the problem is not apnea. That's the end of the problem. You know, it's like how many people have high blood pressure. That's the end stage of the problem. Really you would like to be preventative in nature. So mm-hmm. instead of, you know, using a dental example, how many people have caries that you have to take care of? Wouldn't it be better to get involved earlier and say, how many people have a host response issue that would allow caries to occur and have a diet problem? I mean, so we need to be sort of front loading our resolution rather than trying to deal with the problem in the end. So if you say to me, you know, how many kids have apnea, that number is actually pretty small as a percentage of the population, like 2%. Mm-hmm. of the population. So if all dentistry did was find the apneic patient, while it still would be really an important thing and life-changing for many people, it ignores where the real problem is, which is how many kids have limitations to breathing, flow limitations that stimulate them at night to not get the benefit of being asleep. The ultimate goal is to get a good night's sleep, and children sleep. They need 10 to 12 hours of sleep. And so anything that fragments that and keeps them from gaining the advantage of being asleep is harmful to that child. It's harmful for their body. It's harmful for growth and development issues. But I think most importantly, it's harmful neurocognitively. I mean, it can cost you 10 to 20 IQ points easily. And mm-hmm. so if we were to kind of think in those terms, how many kids are more like the insomnia patient, the one that's waking all the time and really has a difficult time staying asleep. They end up in the parent's bed, or, you know, they end up sleeping at the other end of the bed because they wandered all over the bed. How many of those kids are around? We don't have a great number on that because mm-hmm. most labs don't follow it. If you used a marker, say you used a marker like bruxism, and we've had that conversation in the past, that I think bruxism is a way that we protect the airway from acid, from respiratory issues. I think it's a way that we signal that there's a compromise. So let's just not argue the point. Let's just assume for the moment it is a marker for little airway events. Mm-hmm. Well, we know in the 5 to 6 year old age range, about 30% of kids grind their teeth. So I mean, you could maybe say 30% of kids out there have some sort of respiratory disturbance that is creating an environment that makes it more excitatory for them, and therefore they don't gain the advantage of getting a good night's sleep.
Right. And I don't even know if this would be accurate, but it would be the gateway disruption that leads to other things. I mean, we could talk about bruxism. I just wonder, kids nowadays with with Fortnite coming into the scene, I'm sure you've heard of that. And some of these kids, I hear stories, kids are staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning and they can't function. And during the day, they're losing their mind. And on top of it, they can't sleep. And then compounding with all the mental health. I mean, United States, we're in a mental health crisis. And so I think one of the foundations for just natural, normal health, it starts at a very young age in pediatric. And I can't go one more minute without telling you about this. Like, even NBA teams, now let's talk, we're going to talk about kids, but NBA teams now are requiring some of their players to wear sleep bands, because if I'm going to give you $20, $30 million, I need data that shows me that you're going to sleep, because these NBA players that are tweeting at night and Fortnite, their free throw percentages are going down. They're down by like 10%. So they're finding that sleep is a huge deal, and it's got to be part of the equation overall. So you can imagine when children don't get this pattern early on, how disruptive later it's going to be. So having the ADA involved is critical, because you know how this is. We need a certain number before this starts to have some traction. And you're going to have to keep me focused on this, because I love this topic so much. I could go everywhere, but talk more about.
Okay, wait, before you go any further.
Go ahead.
Why did you think I wouldn't know what Fortnite is?
I only that to share my pain with the rest.
I got a 14-year-old. Come on.
Fortnite is ruining my life. Like and then I hear all these kids, like, they can't, they're like, Fortnite, you know, like, so I don't know. It's just one of those things.
I'll give you a few answers.
Please.
I know what Fortnite is.
Okay.
I got a 14-year-old. LeBron James has his own sleep coach.
Really?
That's important. Yes. And so premier athletes cannot function if they don't get it. In fact, there is not a human being around, alive today that can function without compromise with less than 6 hours of sleep. That's an adult. You need 7 to 8 hours. Now, too much sleep is also a bad thing, but the problem we have is we're sleeping too little. So what people say is, oh, I do just fine on 5 hours of sleep. You do. You do absolutely fine to the level you've now set as your max. But that's not where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be functioning at a much higher level than what you really are. A simple night of less than 4 hours of sleep, and you're absolutely compromised all day up to and you know what you would be if you were drinking all night. So you're right, premier athletes, but it's not just premier athletes can't function at their maximum.
Nobody can. Yeah.
No one can do it.
Now, I got to ask you, how many hours?
Oh, by the way, kids are 10 to 12.
10
and
to 12.
Unfortunately, what we do is we make kids live on our schedules a lot of times. When I'm at Walmart at midnight and I see these kids wander around, don't ask me why I'm at Walmart at midnight, by the way. But when I'm there at Walmart at midnight and there's a kid walking around, that kid's got a problem. Yeah. And I understand that family lives are difficult and there's all kinds of reasons that it may be occurring, but I'm telling you, if they're staying up that late, they are not the same kid you will have in the future. They will be damaged by that if you set a repeated pattern of that.
Yeah, and I beat this horse to death on this one, but Tom Brady, who just turned 41, he gets on average 9 hours of sleep. You can look it up right now. He actually posts his schedule online and talks about how sleep. LeBron, ESPN reported LeBron gets as much as, not consistently, but sometimes he gets as much as 12 hours of sleep. How many hours of sleep do you know how many he gets?
No, but okay. 12 is too much. But
that's too much. Federer
interestingly, the athletes, I mean, since we're going that way, interestingly, there's a company that's now monitoring that on athletes. And so high caliber athletes are monitoring sleep and these they're very focused on it. And what they say is a repetitive amount of sleep every night, something that is a repeatable pattern, is healthier than if you've got like a little short area and a longer area and all that. So they want to try to be as consistent as possible with sleep to make it as healthy as possible.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard this, but the richest man of all time, Jeff Bezos, $151 billion. He sleeps on average 8 hours a night because he says, like, my brain has to function at the highest level. He also doesn't schedule meetings in the morning, has breakfast with his family. Like, they figured it out. Sleep is very important for me to be able to function. So this is not a trivial topic, or this is a huge topic. So let's get back to the pediatric.
Yeah, because getting you back to the pediatric, the difference is, I mean, so Bezos and LeBron and everybody else is figuring out that sleep is important, but they're saying it's important for me to gain the benefit of sleep so that I can be at my best the next day. The huge difference with this pediatric airway summit was the people that we're talking about there, their bodies and brains are growing. So Bezos is taking advantage of sleep in a completed body and brain, trying to maximize what he gets and to avoid Alzheimer's and dementia and high blood pressure and all the things that a poor sleep can actually make you predisposed to or causally related to. But a kid's body and brain that's growing, if they aren't getting sleep, they're damaging the neural connections and they're damaging everything. So they don't ever become that person down the road, which is the sad part and the reason it's so important to find it young. So this round table, if the ADA does nothing else but really focus on pediatric, they will have done a tremendous amount. If we can get a guideline out there and we can start getting people to screen, because yes, sleep is important, but sleep is never as important as the first few years of life while your body and brain are growing.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the implications of this. So the ADA created this, they came up with a position statement, but they didn't necessarily address the how. What does that mean to us, the people that are watching?
So what the roundtable did, I mean, it's got a lot of purposes to it, but I think if we were to boil it down to one thing that was most important that we're trying to get out of the roundtable is get all these minds together and formulate a way to go to the dentist that's practicing in Longview, Texas, and the one practicing in Detroit, inner city, and everywhere around the United States, so it fits into a restorative practice. Or an ortho practice, pediatric practice, but most importantly, a restorative dentistry dental practice. And that restorative dental practice can be a single dentist, it can be a group practice, or it can be a huge conglomerate. It shouldn't matter. And it ought to be quick. So the goal was, how can we come up with, say, maybe five things that a dentist needs to look at so that within a 2-minute period of time, they've got a clue as to whether or not there's an airway issue. And in my opinion, what we need to strive for is something you're already doing so that it's not something new. It's just part of a routine exam that you would do on every single kid that walks in the practice. You just start seeing it with new eyes. And then I'm pushing for them to create some sort of educational tool that we can have where you can say, here's a new policy. Here's the exam we'd like you to do. Here's a quick video explaining why that exam is important. And the last part, which I think is the most important part, which is here's what you do with the information once you get it.
Yeah.
So that they know where to funnel people and where they don't have to. You know, the ADA says you're free to do things. So if you like doing things to intervene, especially orthodontics, then you have the opportunity to do that. But right. If you just want to screen them, holy smokes. I mean, they're right now sitting in the practice is not getting screened.
Right.
And not getting out of the practice to get help. And so, wow, I mean, just think of the amazing advantage if we just all started screening.
Right. Now, can I ask you too, because this was quite the panel. You got a lot of firepower here. Two of the orthodontists were AAO people. You've got, you know, some of the top people in the world, was there pretty much a consensus on a lot of the thinking, or did you have a pretty good healthy debate in some respects?
There was debate on a couple of things. One is the fact that you would, if you're going to come up with some sort of guidelines or consensus statement, you want to base it on science. And the biggest problem we've got in this field is that we don't have a lot of science behind it. And in my opinion, we're not going to ever have a lot of science behind it. Science, the way medicine, because we're working in conjunction with medicine here, right? So we've got all these medical colleagues that are there, we've got all these dentists, and we're trying to combine how we do things. But medical research is totally different. It's sponsored they get big dollars, and they have huge institutions, and they have great record keeping that they can go. So they could, you know, if they came up with an idea that could be done with chart review, they could have access to 100,000 charts, right? With mm-hmm. no problem at all. They just put in some search guidelines and they come up with all these patients and they come up with a research project. So now they're 20, 30, 100,000 people in this study. And so the power of the study is astronomical. Or they come up with an idea that a company wants to market, you know, sees a profitable opportunity for them, or a pharmaceutical company comes up with that. And so they get tons of investment capital into it with the hopes of getting something out of it. Well, except for implants, what other area in dentistry is there really that kind of study? I mean, even in implants, our studies are relatively weak numerically of how many people we look at and how many people we treat, all the rest. I mean, so you look at an orthodontic study, for the most part, it's 25 people or 30 people, not 300, 3,000, 30,000, right? So when you do a consensus statement, you want to review the literature and you weigh the literature and say, is it, you know, how powerful is the literature to support our opinion? And it will never be powerful in what we do. It will never, ever reach the level of medicine. And that's the rub, because the medical docs that were there know that we can help and know that we should guide and know, I mean, they were all on board, but you can't write it down as this is what we believe because there is no solid science behind it. And even in medicine, they did a pediatric consensus statement in 2012. And even in medicine, the best article grouping of articles they had was rated as a B+. So they're not even good. And I mean, we at that time in 2012, our evidence was so weak, they couldn't even include it in the conversation. So we've got to figure out a way that we can work with medicine and start changing from this evidence-based concept, because we'll never reach their standards, to more of a practical evaluation of what do clinicians do in a clinical setting. Right. And so that's what we're trying to see. The other issue that was not contentious, but required more discussion was how complex do you want it to be? So the people that were there on the panel are, you know, that were had a lot of input, were really talented at finding these kids and doing stuff with them. And I mean, they were amazing what they're doing to change lives. But I mean, the way that they intake people is extremely complex. And so I think we need to just dumb the thing down so everybody can do it, you know, make it easy, and then give them an opportunity to learn more down the road if they want to, but for sure start finding people and getting them out.
Right. Now I get this question and I want you to help us bridge the gap. So let's say I'm a 32-year-old dentist watching this and I'm like, Jeff, I totally get it, but my practice has 5,000 patients. It's all PPO. This is so far. How does the ADA help me? You know, because everyone's common complaint is the ADA is a great organization, but it doesn't really help the private care dentist. Just add some context. It's an incredible organization, but getting the ADA's position on this is the first step for what might come. Put those two together, could you? Because I get those all the time. Yeah.
So I guess I would say a couple of things. One is, when the ADA, we've been fighting a battle with American Academy of Sleep Medicine for a long time now. And they may not, your 32-year-old dentist may not be aware of it, but in every state, the physicians, the sleep physicians, are trying to restrict how dentists can actually function in looking at airways. Mm-hmm. If you follow the American Academy of Sleep Medicine's thought process to its logical conclusion, which is dentists, if there's anything a dentist finds that looks like an airway problem, it needs to go to a sleep physician for evaluation, right? If that's really what they want. If you follow that to its logical conclusion, that means any patient with a constricted maxillary arch, any patient with a retrognathic mandible, any patient with with bruxing, any patient with erosion, when you make a list of all the things that could be craniofacial alterations of growth and development that could be an airway problem, you're going to be sending everybody out to a physician before you do any treatment at all. So the ADA came out with a statement that said, all those areas that could be airway problems, you need to evaluate them, and you need to, in conjunction with medicine, but you need to also be involved in the therapy. So we to have that organization supporting us is really important. And so, yeah, I know if you're 32 and you're at a PPO practice and you're trying to come up with your ADA dues, that's a pain in the butt. But they're doing good things in this area for sure, in helping support us. And it feels, as a guy that's been fighting these battles with lawsuits in Texas and all the rest that we've had to deal with, it really felt great for the ADA to come out with that kind of support for dentistry.
So. Yeah, and that's what I want to reinforce, because this is a huge moment for dentistry in this respect. So it was great, and it was a great celebration. And these are no slouches that were involved in this committee at all.
Yeah, no. The other thing about young dentists and this issue is it's changing. You know, how is this airway and looking at pediatric airway? How is that going to change my world? I mean, if all you're looking for is opportunities to care for people. I mean, this is a huge one. You know, one of the issues that I see in some of those practices is trying to get production, right? When people come in and it's whatever the insurance will pay for. But if you go to a parent and say that's brought a kid into your practice and say, this kind of looks like airway issues. And one of the things that I'm noticing is the arches are constricted and this, that, and the other. I think we ought to do these types of therapies. There are tons of opportunities for dentists that are interested in early intervention strategies to get involved in this, especially if you want to start doing it really young. Because if you want to get involved when I think it's important, which is 3, 4, 5 years old, there isn't an orthodontist around more than likely that's going to want to do those cases. And if you want to take those on, then you've got a great revenue stream that is right there in your practice for doing training of how to swallow and breathe and expansion. And so there are big revenue streams that can happen. And those are people that are doing Invisalign. And I mean, there's opportunities that funnel into their practice from a health perspective, rather than just trying to talk everyone into, you know, trying to do crowns and such that, or aesthetic dentistry that they may or may not want. So.
Totally agree. You know, we always talk about how there are dentists that fix teeth and there are dentists that change lives. It's not the same business. And what a great opportunity to position that. So, but enjoy the work, enjoy the work. What else do I need to know about this particular meeting and what happens over the next year?
I guess the thing you need to know is it's not over. This is just one step. And so the what's the next step type of thing, is still to be developed. And we didn't walk out that day going, okay, here are the 5 steps you need to do. I think we came out of it with an understanding that we all want to work on the problem. We need to come up with a way of doing it. But it don't sit there and wait for it to come around next month. It's coming, but it will not be this year. I can't anticipate that being the case. It'll be next year before that actually is instituted. What it looks like, I hope, you know, right now it's kind of up in the air, but I would hope that it is extremely simple, like I was saying. Mm-hmm. I would love to see, you know, here are the 5 things you look at. You look at the face, you look at the maxilla, you look at the mandible, you look at the tongue, you look at the back of the throat, you're done. Mm-hmm. And you're already looking at all those things, so it's not going to change your world. Just jot down a few notes, maybe include a couple things in your new patient intake form so that it doesn't complicate anyone's lives. Because if I make your life complicated, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And then I hope it grows from there, because I don't think that's the last step. I think once dentists start screening, they're going to see the real problem and how big it is. And they're going to want more information and they're going to want to be more involved in this. And then who knows where it takes off from there.
Yeah, well, we don't see any sign of it slowing down on our side. It's the hottest topic in all of education. You guys out at Spear, these courses are booked out like crazy. You know, people love it.
Yeah, you know, we run a course called Airway Prosthodontics. It's there's a seminar and a workshop. And the last time we talked, you actually had a 2-year waiting list on the workshop. What happened was 2020, we were only going to do 3 workshops. Then it went to 6. Now it's at 10. So all that's resolved now. So there's space out there now in some of the workshops. So we've got 10 workshops next year. And we've got a bunch of seminars that we're doing as well.
Now, I do have to ask why. So you talk to dentists that sit in those courses with you. What do they say to you? So, and some, these are not just new dentists. These are well-established restorative dentists who go, you know what? I've been doing this for a long time, and here's what I learned in the last couple of days listening to you. What do they say to you?
So there are a couple of things. The one that I always have people do is I start every lecture by making people draw a box in the upper right-hand corner of a sheet of paper. And by the end of my lecture, if it's 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, however long it is, at the end of that deal, I want a name in that box of the person that you think in your world you need to take care of. And no one walks out of there without a name in the box. And that's why the courses are so powerful, because it impacts us directly, every single one of us. It'll either be ourselves, our name in the box, or someone in our family. So when I used to teach about treatment planning or veneers or whatever else, you know, I would hope it had some sort of impact, but it's nothing like you sitting there looking at the screen, thinking about a loved one the whole time. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. The other thing is that from a restorative dentist practice is it answers a lot of the questions that you wondered about. So for so long, we were always, every course we taught is about the how are you going to do it? You know, how did it happen? How are you going to deal with it? We started asking why, and why did it happen? So for a few years, I kept going around the country saying, got to start asking why, you got to start asking why. And the why might be some triggering mechanism that the airway actually is responsible for. The newer question and that we added a couple of years ago now, or a year and a half ago, is when. And I think that really is the more important question. Why is a good question, but when did it happen? And when it happened was young, almost exclusively. This is not, you know, when a 60-year-old person, well, I was talking to a guy today, he's 51 and he's got severe sleep apnea, he's ground his teeth away, he's got erosion all over his teeth, and we had a decision to make, which was, you know, do we restore your teeth the way I've done them for years, or do we actually move the skeleton into the right location because it's been in the wrong location his entire life? So when we track it back over time, you can tell that it happened when he was growing and developing, and he's had these issues his entire life. And so the airway could explain a lot of the medical issues he's got, a lot of the physical issues he's got, but we missed it when he was 3, 4, 5 years old, and now at 51, we're having to play catch up with a problem that's going to be significantly harder to deal with. So when, I think, is what this round table actually spoke to, which is, can, if we can figure out a way to get into it earlier, we have an opportunity to have people healthy for a lifetime, or at least kick the can way down the road so that medical complications are not as significant and not as often and not as soon as they would have been otherwise.
Yeah, this is awesome, buddy. And you have a course called Airway Prosthodontics. Just tell us about it, because you've been so gracious to offer us a discount code. And can I get in the next 3 years if I sign up? Like, do I have to wait 3 years to take this course?
No, you're in.
Okay, I can come. Okay, cool. Yeah. That's cool.
You have to stand on the side, though.
All right,
like the other one.
Hey, I don't mind. It's got skill. I can sneak out for a few minutes. So, well, what happens in the Airway Pros course that you teach?
We've got two courses out there focused on airway. Mm-hmm. We also have a third course, which is focused on sleep. And so we're real clear at Spear that there's a difference between airway and sleep. Sleep is about making appliances, getting the medical insurance to pay for it. That's Steve Carstensen's course. My course is on airway, and in the seminar, it's 2 days long, and we will go from, the easiest way to think of it is we're going to give you a background in sleep that allows you to talk to physicians, background in airway dysfunction that allows you to talk to physicians, and we're going to break out your patients into three different groups: children, we're going to talk a lot about kids, young fit females, which typically is our sort of our TMD patient, or men, can be men, but very toned men, more the insomnia type of patient, and then old fat men, which is my apnea patient that comes in with wear and erosion. So that's a seminar, and it gives you a foundation. Foundation, then, if you want to pursue it further, is to go into the workshop. It's actually 3 days. And I practiced with Greg Kinzer up in Seattle and Frank Spear for a couple of years up there. And the way that I did the workshop is I am essentially pretending you're practicing with us for a day. And so here's all the background you need. And here's the Seattle protocol that we came up with when I was up there, in order to figure out what the appropriate appliance is for people. And it's not just a sleep appliance. It can be something as simple as a night guard, or even as simple as a breathe right strip. That's all you need. So we just figure out how to make the airway better. And then finally, what does it take to go away? Included in that workshop is a pediatric protocol that we use so that they can actually know how to do the exam and what I recommend as the way that children ought to be treated.
Yeah, and you've been a great mentor to me just as far in so many different ways, but on treatment planning, everything, understanding. And you helped me understand a year ago, you guys turned 35 years of treatment planning on its head. You went from 4 pillars to 5 pillars. So this will help people understand why this is so. What were the four and what's the fifth now?
So facially generated treatment planning was developed by Frank Spear, 1983, maybe something in that range. And he would talk about aesthetics, function, structure, biology. Basically, it's like setting a denture. So where do the upper teeth belong? Where do the lower teeth? How do they occlude? And then looking at structural issues that may compromise the predictability of the case. And finally, the biology, perio, joint issues, things like that. So I came into their world and kind of screwed it all up because I said, you know, there's another thing that you're missing, which is the airway. And so we tried to sort of shove it in, and we shoved it into biology because it sort of fit the word. But what would happen is you'd walk through the treatment plan. Like the guy today, I was saying, this 51-year-old guy, I could open his vertical dimension. I can restore the teeth, little crown lengthening. I can do all that. But when I walked through the treatment plan, if I got all the way down to biology on that guy, I went, holy smokes, he's got severe sleep apnea. I mean, bad, big time sleep apnea. Well, my treatment planning decisions would be different. I could get the teeth repaired, but you know, the maxilla is in the wrong location. Mm-hmm. So I would have on step one gone, he's severe sleep apneic. How do I restore the teeth? I can do this, but you know, they would be better if they were here. Aesthetically, they would be better if they were in a different location. And so Andy would be healthier at the same time. So today, what we do before we begin any treatment plan out at Spear Education is we begin by asking, do they have an airway problem or not? If the answer is yes, we keep it in mind as we go through the treatment plan. Now, you may at the end go, well, you know, I don't want to do whatever it is, or there's not a dental resolution to it. You could very easily say that, right. In which case you just do your treatment plan. But sometimes you can actually make people healthy and go through all the other things. And I think that's a heck of a service.
Absolutely.
You know, like today, talking to this guy, it was like he kept saying, well, really, you want to break my jaw? And I go, no, I don't want to break them. I just want to move them into a better location. And here's why. I want to make you healthy. I just want, because that surgery is going to make him healthy. That's the ultimate way of fixing him. And I get to fix his teeth at the same time. So it's such a, I mean, I keep sitting there going, gosh, I'm almost talking myself out of work, it seemed like today, because I kept going, yeah, I can fix your teeth. He goes, you can do this? I go, yeah, oh yeah, I've been doing it for 30 years now. I can do this. But I really would rather you move your teeth into another location before I fix your teeth.
Right.
So, because I want him healthy in the end. And because then I think, I mean, What a valuable tool dentistry could be if we could actually make that happen. Guy ends up getting his teeth fixed and make them look good, function well, and then we also make it to where he, you know, lives the rest of his life with little to no apnea. That would be awesome.
It would be awesome. Buddy, it is awesome how you're influencing the world of dentistry and changing so many people's lives. So thank you so much. Now, we posted a link to the Airway Pros course that just teaches, and I'm just going to tell you, you got to go. Like, and you've been kind enough to give us a $169 discount. You also have shot a ton of videos on this on the Spear Education online platform. Yeah. Just tell us about that. What are they?
Now, Spear Online is a great resource, and you were talking about the 32-year-old dentist. They learn differently than I do. I'm more hands-on. You know, I want to be in the room with the guy lecturing. The newer dentists almost like do a Netflix kind of education, right? And so Spear Online is that opportunity for them. We've got a ton of videos on all different subjects. But for the last year and a half, I've been cutting videos on airway, and I've done a bunch on pediatric. So if you're wondering about this particular topic, I've got a questionnaire that I put together for pediatric screening. And so there are, I think it's 15 points that we want to go through and why, and you would hand it to the parent and check all the boxes. But what I did was not just go over what the questions ought to be. It was, why did I think that was an important question, and what am I looking for in that question? And then if they answer yes, then we've got other videos saying, here's the way that you go about figuring out what to do with them. So the questions are answered through the videos. At least we've laid a good foundation. So
that's awesome. You can learn at your own pace and your own time, all that stuff. And you've been kind enough to give us a $169 discount for that. So check it out. We posted it here in the body of the link. Jeff, I always love every minute I get with you. We got to have dinner soon, but we can't get kicked. Let's try not to get kicked out. No, it's awesome. So, buddy, I am just so grateful. Stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching. Really appreciate you just tuning in today. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor. Hit the share button. Share the show with your friends. And keep sending us things that you want to see from Jeff. I'm going to have Jeff back over and over again. He can talk forever on almost anything and get some great information, learn a lot. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.